I'm Sophie, and I'm here to welcome you to Cactus City's podcast, Not a Groupie. If you haven't listened to the podcast yet, I forgive you. Not a Groupie is a music podcast by women in music for women in music, where we bring you the unfiltered reality of the music industry. At Cactus City, we love celebrating women's successes and are dedicated to creating a transparent music industry where women and gender minorities can flourish. Every week on Not a Groupie, we speak to a different industry legend who gives you, the listener, advice on how to get into different job roles in the music industry. We believe this information should be accessible to everyone. You can listen to the rest of Season 1 on your favourite podcast streaming platform, and you can check us out on socials on Twitter and Instagram at Not a Groupie Pod. And don't forget to check out Cactus City, Cactus City UK, on TikTok, Instagram and Twitter. For our season finale of Not a Groupie Season 1, we knew we had to end the season with a bang. So, our special guest for this week is General Secretary of the Musicians Union, Naomi Pohl. Naomi Pohl is the first female General Secretary of the Musicians Union since it founded in 1893, so this is big time. The Musicians Union is a UK trade union that has over 30,000 members in the music industry. From freelancers to songwriters to producers, they represent so many people, and it's amazing that we get to speak to Naomi about what the MU is doing to make the industry safer for everyone. It's time to meet Naomi Pohl, so grab a drink and get cosy. You're going to love her. So today on Not a Groupie, we have the wonderful Naomi Pohl. We're very, very excited to have you on. To start off, we just want to talk a little bit about the MU. So for people that don't know what the MU is, would you like to tell us?
Yeah, so the Musicians Union is a trade union for professional musicians living and working in the UK. So we've got about 32,000 members and they work across all areas of the industry. So we've got orchestral musicians, we've got session musicians, featured artists, singer-songwriters, basically the whole range. And musicians, quite a wide term, so that includes producers, for example, as well. And we're a trade union, so we're here to try and get our members the best deal possible, really, from all the employers and engagers that they work with. A lot of our members are freelance, so that one of the challenges is trying to get people the best deal when they're out there negotiating their own contracts and their own fees, and they're working in a whole range of workplaces, like quite informal work environments a lot of the time. Yeah. You know, you think about the big unions that have people employed in one type of workplace, for example, like, you know, the transport industry, but our members are working across, you know, in pubs and clubs and festivals and places that are like not so well organised. So it's tricky, but it's great because there's a real variety, and obviously the music industry is quite an exciting industry to work in.
Definitely a very exciting one, and it's cool that you get to work with so many different people as well, and, you know, protect us from everything, basically. Okay, so talking about your kind of specific role, what does that entail? So you obviously were the first woman to be elected into your role, which is amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very, very exciting. So we obviously saw you on our International Women's Day event and had a chat with you there. So when you, the day you actually got elected as well, so it was very, very fun. What does your role entail?
So as General Secretary, there's a role of being the in a leadership role, really, within the organisation. So one of the things I'm really keen to do is kind of try and set the culture and the tone of the organisation, which you can only really do from the top.
Yeah.
So as an elected person, our members, the musicians, have kind of put their faith in me to deliver certain things. So during the election process, I was promising to try and improve pay and conditions, and also promised to try and eradicate sexual harassment from the industry, definitely to be more inclusive as a union. So a lot of that does start with me, I think, as General Secretary, but also it's quite an external facing role. So I think what I possibly didn't appreciate is that it's quite a public, you can be a public figure. So
yeah.
I went to a festival recently where I was on a panel with other women General Secretaries, and I also went to a march recently, and all the female General Secretaries were up the front of the march in London. And it, you know, that's just not the way it was a few years ago. It's been a very male-dominated
yeah.
movement, and the music industry is quite male-dominated. So I feel like I'm in a position now where I can actually start to change that a bit.
How does that feel? Do you feel a lot of pressure? Are you excited? How is it?
I'm super excited about it, and I absolutely love my job, and I'm really really delighted that musicians actually chose me for the role, especially because our membership's about 68% male. Mm-hmm. So I've had to rely on men to vote me into this position. And obviously they've hopefully, well, they've chosen me because they think that I'm going to do a good job and I'm going to deliver. But I know also that a lot of women voted for me, and a lot of gender minorities and other kind of minority groups within the organisation who feel that they've been underrepresented in the past. So there's a chance for me to make a change. So I'm really excited and I'm very passionate about it. But also it is a lot of responsibility because I feel that I've made all these promises and now I've got to deliver.
Yeah, it's really exciting though, like talking about people voting for you. I did.
Oh,
I did.
Thank you.
I was there in my dressing gown and my Crocs running down to the post box and was just loving life. I was like, needs to be done, making, you know, being part of history, which is really exciting. And it goes to show as well, there are people that obviously, like you said, with your membership, it kind of being more men that actually, that people do want a change. They want a change and they want everyone to be protected and everything to be inclusive. And I think that's a really good start. And having you as the head of that is very damn exciting. I'm really excited for you.
Thank you. And it was awesome when I turned up at the event you did on International Women's Day and there were posters with my face
on. Yeah, I know.
And I was very, feeling very celebratory.
We were really excited.
It was very nerve-wracking waiting for that result, I can tell you.
Yeah, I can imagine. Honestly, it was a really exciting day at Cactus when we found out you got in. I was just like celebrating it. Gals winning. We love to see it. And being like part of such like a historical thing as well, like being the first woman to be in your role is like, that is cool. Really cool. I'm very excited for you.
Thank you.
So one of the key resources that you have like for the MU, obviously we kind of touched upon sexual harassment, is the MU Safe Space tool. Obviously we spoke a little bit earlier about how, you know, there has been an increase of people using the service. Mm-hmm. So it obviously is a tool where you can report sexual harassment in the music industry, and it's the first of its kind, which I think is a really important thing to touch on there. Could you describe like what it is and how you use it and how you think it would develop into the future?
Yeah, so we set up Safe Space really in the wake of the Harvey Weinstein case. So there was a question over, you know, if this is the way that people are treated in the entertainment industry, are we going to have this issue in music? And are we going to start hearing big names in music being called out for this kind of behaviour? So we surveyed our members and we also set up the Safe Space really to give people a chance to like to have somewhere safe that they could go and report. Mm-hmm. And that's fed into all the campaigning work that we've done. So there's a lot of case studies that have been brought to me, and a lot of women who report, they want to report because they don't want these things to happen to people in the future. So that's their kind of primary motivation. So I'm able to use some of the case studies totally anonymized, and it's always been really hard for complainants to actually speak out about the experiences they've had, but I can do that on their behalf.
Yeah.
And I can protect their identities. So I quite often talk about the kinds of things that happen, and then it gives us a chance to lobby for changes. But also we provide legal advice. So sometimes women approach me and they say, oh, I really want to call this person out. And then we give them some legal advice before they do that. Or we might help them to get their statement into a shape where they're going to be less at risk of a defamation lawsuit. Unfortunately, you do see those kind of things.
Exactly.
Or we can take action sometimes behind the scenes. Like we could write to an organisation and say, we've had a report of this happening on your watch, and we don't have to necessarily name the person who made the complaint.
Yeah.
So that's something we do as a trade union anyway, is try to kind of stand between the person making the complaint and the person who's being complained of.
Yeah, definitely.
To try and avoid that pattern of the person making the complaint actually being the one that suffers the detriment, or their career's affected, or their reputation's affected. So that's the idea of it. And how it's going to progress, I think, well, I mean, you hope, obviously, that we'll stop getting reports because the industry will get safer. But unfortunately, we've just had a new influx of reports. And it's the reports we get are from every area of the music industry.
Yeah.
It's not specific to one particular type of workplace. Like, it's not specific to labels or studios. It's not specific to orchestras or the theatre pits in London. It's like, unfortunately, these things happen everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's the message I'm trying to get across. And then we're trying to advocate for change.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do feel like some progress has been made. The government made commitments to change the law, some of the things that we've been asking for, but they've not done it yet. So it's a matter of saying, you committed to do this, like, please please just do it, because the longer that you leave it, the more these kind of things are happening and people don't have a legal route to go down.
Exactly.
But also the government are looking to set up an independent standards authority, which would be a bit more like a regulator. So it'd actually be somewhere where people could go to make reports and have an investigation.
Yeah, and I think that's really important because obviously, like we spoke about before, there's a lot of freelancers in the music industry. There isn't a HR system either. So actually having a tool where you can actually report these things and have like the musicians union to get advice from is so important as well, because obviously like having one of these horrific things happen to you, like sexual harassment or assault, is very consuming in like who you are and what you do and how you act. And I think actually having somewhere you can go report it, having the advice, is so important just to be a human really and just to exist, because it's a lot of pressure on an individual to have that and keep that to themselves. But also you may not feel like confident enough to, well, you shouldn't have to out people really, should you? Like, you should just be able to be protected in the first place. And the fact that there are more investigations is only a good thing, because we can get a real like full image of what is actually happening, you know, parts of the industry that are worse, like what can be done as well. And I think that's really important. I know you've talked a bit before about actually obviously like the reporting tool. What is there like in terms of support for people that, you know, have experienced this? Where would you recommend to go or from there?
Well, so one of the things when we first set up the service, we had training from Rape Crisis. And one of the things they said is that you might be receiving reports from people who've never reported this to anyone before. What we don't do is provide counselling, but there's now a service from Help Musicians UK where there's actually a dedicated counselling support line where people are specially trained to deal with these kind of reports. But we, with us, it's a case of, firstly, we start from a position of belief. We believe you. Well, like, people don't report things, in my experience, that aren't true. They report things that they've experienced. They wouldn't do it if it wasn't true, because it's an incredibly difficult thing to do.
Oh, yeah, and the repercussions of doing that, it can be, like, to some people, it could be the end of your career. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously, that's changing, and having these tools and then other resources helps that to stop. But also, it's not an easy decision for anyone to report something like that at all.
No, it's not. So yeah, we believe people. And then the thing is to try and, like, I've come to understand the term kaleidoscopic justice. So it's rare that we can get to deliver proper legal justice, because unfortunately the law's just not there to protect people, specifically freelancers. However, it's kind of survivor-led. So what is it that you want to achieve and what are your options? And sometimes the most important role we play is to actually explain to somebody what their options are, so they can make the decision about what they want to do next, how they want to pursue it. And there have been cases where we've pursued something and we've got a result that the person's really happy with. Sometimes they just want to make a report because they want to feed into the campaigning work we're doing. So it's really about what the person wants to achieve, and we do our best to try and help with that. Or signpost on as well. That's the other thing.
Speaking of someone, because I have actually used your Safe Space tool, and I think that's, so like hearing about actually what you do with the information is like really good, because I think there was for me, like, to some degree, it felt like, what is the point in me doing this? Like, is anything going to change? And the fact that obviously that goes into like a statistic and then actually fighting real change is like very, very important. And I think it's good to know that, really. Like, and like you said, everyone has a different journey with what they want to do with it. Some people, like me, it was just to be like, this happened to me, I want to make someone aware and I don't know where else to go. But for others, it's obviously a much bigger thing. They want to do something different. Like, it's all very, like you said, individual led. And I think that's really important. Obviously, from like surveys and stuff you've done before as well, that it came out that basically nearly half of the members of the MU have been like sexually harassed at work. How did that surprise you? How did that make you feel?
I think it was shocking, because for me, the shocking thing was that it wasn't specific to one area of the business. So I think what I found shocking was the range of complaints that were reported in the survey, and the range of experiences and what kind of work, because you might have an idea of what an orchestra is and feel like it's a much more formal environment, and so it's less likely to occur, but actually it does occur. So I think it highlighted how widespread the problem is, and that it's essentially it's a cultural issue. So that's what's really challenging, is that how do you change the culture of an industry? And it's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. And it's got to take a lot of commitment from everybody involved.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, as I said, I'm still getting reports of really inappropriate behaviour. Sadly, sometimes I think the people who are behaving this way don't even realise what they're doing. So I think we've got an education piece yeah. to do. Because you might just think it's a joke and it's a bit of banter, but what you don't realise is how uncomfortable it's making people feel.
Exactly. And I think that's really, that is really important. Like you said, some people don't realise like what they're doing, and actually that you may have good intentions, but for other people that could be triggering and going into kind of other parts of trauma. And I think actually there's ways you can go around it that kind of, for us, if you have been sexually harassed, it's really obvious when something is sexual harassment. But like you said, some people just don't know, and actually kind of going, you know, maybe don't say that, maybe don't do this, or like if you're unsure, kind of ask. It's kind of being mindful of other people, their personal space, their feelings. And I think that is definitely a good way to kind of go down if people don't understand. It doesn't need to be like a big attack, you know. I think some people do have innocent intentions and it doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
A poorly timed joke or things change.
And sometimes the culture of the workplace itself mm-hmm. is the problem. So
yeah.
we've definitely had reports from people who've gone into a place that has not felt safe. And it's the other people in that space that are making it feel unsafe
yeah.
by their behaviour.
Mm-hmm.
And just because it's always been that way doesn't mean that it can't change and doesn't mean that it's okay. So
yeah.
it's like trying to engender that change somehow.
Yeah.
And also trying to explain to people how they can be good allies.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a training aspect there to kind of say, if you're one of the good guys mm-hmm. And there's loads of you out there and yeah. you see something and you think it's uncomfortable and you're not, you know, or you can either reach out to the person it's happened to and say, do you want me to be a witness? Because I can help you make a report.
Yeah.
Or you can say to the person who's the perpetrator, I clocked that and it wasn't okay, because that it might just be enough to change their behaviour and stop them doing it again.
Yeah, I think that's really important as well, because quite often the responsibility is left on the person that has been a victim of like sexual harassment. It's not your job to have to explain to someone why that's not okay. And I think, like you said, having allies is such an important part of the process. Mm. So it's someone external from the situation that can educate or just help out, because quite often with like sexual harassment, the onus is put on women or gender minorities or whoever's experienced it, and taking that away is a really good step in the right direction to have allies. How would you like to see kind of the music industry change for women and gender minorities? What do you think will help make it a safer place?
Well, the problem with this issue is that once you scratch the surface of it, you realise how many problems there are.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it's going to be quite a long-term process. But
yeah.
there's all the issues around safety. So a lot of our members, obviously, they're freelance. They go and do a gig late at night. They're travelling home late at night. There's probably their fee isn't enough to cover the cost of a
yeah.
cab. Or working in a studio and being kept there really late because the session's overrunning.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, somebody should be responsible for making sure that you get home safely. So there's all of those kind of aspects.
Yeah.
As well as the actual culture of the workplaces and the behaviour. So there's a lot that needs to change.
Yeah.
I think that acknowledging the problem was the first step.
Definitely.
And I feel like we might be at a position now in the industry where there is an acknowledgement of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Whether there's an acknowledgement of the scale of the problem is another
yeah.
issue. Because to start with, when I started talking about this, the reaction I got from the industry as a whole was sort of, oh, we don't want people to think the music industry is not a safe place.
It's yeah.
like, well, guess what, guys? It isn't a safe place. And so we have to be honest about that. And we have to acknowledge that we have a problem.
Exactly.
And also, because there's another kind of response I get, which is, well, look, this is just society. And so we, as an industry, we just reflect society at large.
Mm.
No. There's issues in society, but we are like a microcosm of it. But also
yeah.
we're worse, because there's various things about the music industry, like late night working,
mm-hmm.
prevalence of alcohol and drugs
yeah.
in workplaces, really informal working environments,
exactly.
freelance working where people don't have policies, procedures, they don't
mm-hmm.
have the same routes that an employee might
exactly.
have. The imbalance of power is the big
mm-hmm.
one. So abuse of power in relationships, the fact there's a total lack of bargaining power if you're an individual musician up against a major corporation.
Yeah.
So all of those things make it more challenging than you know, me as an office worker, mm-hmm. Where I am working under an employment contract.
Exactly.
So all of these things need tackling. So it's something that I don't, you know, I don't expect that we're going to get there in the next few years, but I do see improvements. And I think the major thing is that people have stopped saying this doesn't happen.
Yeah. And I think actually having the stats, like with your survey, proving that it actually exists, like everyone who in the industry knows it exists, but I think it's kind of maybe not wanting to admit it, whereas like women and gender minorities who kind of in some ways experience these things more, we know it exists, but it's kind of proving to the outside world that it is happening, and having those stats are really important because it's the start of proving and showing and investigating on how to make it a safer space. And literally all of what you're saying is exactly why we created the Chart of Good Practice, to create safety in studio environments. And like you said, all these things come up with getting home. How are you getting home if it's a late night session? How can you protect the people you're working with? And I think it's kind of like the mindfulness of other people and how you can contribute to a safe working environment, which ultimately is the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've also got to accept that it's like a white person in the industry saying that racism doesn't exist in the industry. It's like, yeah, if it's your lived experience, you know that it happens, mm-hmm. and it you might witness it or you might not, but it does. If you don't witness it, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Exactly. That is really important, really, really important. What advice would you give to someone that's a gender minority entering the music industry?
Well, I think the thing is to get your team around you. So mm-hmm. find the people that you do feel comfortable and safe working with. Don't accept that anything's non-negotiable. So we hear that a lot. And again, it comes down to the lack of bargaining power.
Yeah.
If you're told these are standard terms and conditions mm-hmm. and they're non-negotiable, that's not the case. In most cases, that's just not true. So I would always say get advice.
Yeah.
One of the things we do at the MU, and I want to kind of publicise this a bit more to young musicians, is offer legal advice on every contract. So if
yes.
you're a member, mm-hmm. you can have that legal advice on every contract that you're offered, and there's no limit to it. And also, we can help you with the negotiation as well. So that sort of thing is really crucial. Mm-hmm. I think definitely don't just walk in and sign something blindly because you're told it's non-negotiable.
Yeah. I think that's a really, really big thing that we see and hear about time and time again, about not having that legal advice. And is it better to get it before? It's like essential, really. It's not even a better thing. It is essential to get it before, because you're not necessarily going to understand what's in the contract. Like, I wouldn't, if you threw a contract in front of me, know every single thing on there and what it meant. And having experts in that field is so important to get that advice, to make sure you're, you know, doing something that is the best thing for you. And it is as simple as that.
Yeah, and it kind of links into the abuse and harassment issue, mm-hmm. because we have had people who've come to us and said, you know, I signed this deal and it might be like a 5-album deal, and or, you know, it's exclusive for a set period of time. And then if you have a really bad experience with that company and mm-hmm. you decide you don't want to work with them anymore, how do you get out of it?
So exactly.
It's trying to put things in place before there's an issue, or
yeah.
it's preventative action. So
yeah,
it's got to be up front, really.
Definitely. It's like having the foresight before anything like happens. Hopefully it doesn't, you know, but knowing what your options are in those situations, that you're not powerless. Because obviously, saying about power dynamics is really, really important. Speaking like personally about your experiences, what have your experiences been in as a woman in the music industry?
Well, so I think working for trade unions, mm-hmm. already you're in a male-dominated environment a lot of the time. So I've spent a lot of time in board meetings where it's mostly guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, there is a bit of a strange dynamic about that. And again, it's changing. But the risk is that it only takes a couple of key people, women in key jobs, to actually leave and then be replaced with a man. And before you know it, you're back to like 100% male boards. Yeah, it's kind of the, I think the risk personally is that you can assimilate into the culture.
Yeah.
And so I'm really conscious of that, and I'm really trying to make sure that, you know, I have to kind of check myself that that's not what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And you have to be challenging, and you have to accept that you have to work harder to get into the same position. And being a mother as well, I kind of had to fight myself on, you know, it's okay to take maternity leave. I don't have to work throughout it, which, and, you know, I must admit, first time I took maternity leave, I tried to keep working to a certain extent because I felt like I had to prove the point that I could still do the job as well as the man. And then I was doing things like, I think it was a bit challenging the first time I had to come and express milk during one of our quite long executive committee meetings. Yeah. Everyone was supportive, but it was like the first time they'd ever encountered it. So it was a bit like that awkward moment, the first time you have to say, I'm really sorry, but we have to have regular breaks today.
Yeah.
Because otherwise my boobs are just going to explode.
Exactly. And that's the thing. But that's the thing, is those things that people don't understand or don't even think about until they're in their situations and having to do that. And yeah, it may have been a shock to them, but hopefully now, you know, those people will be like, oh yeah, that's, I'm used to this. This has happened before and it's all good. But it's, have, like you said, having to prove yourself and like being worried potentially about losing your job because you can't fuck up, or you can't, you know, you have to just constantly push to be the best all the time, which is not something that happens so much to men because it's just the norm. And I think it's really, really important to touch upon, for sure.
Yeah, and I think you get told a lot that you have to have a thick skin, and there's an expectation that because you're a woman that you might be softer and that you're not up for the fight. And because I'm a trade union leader, there is a certain element of fight that is inevitable. Yeah. And it's how you go about having the fight. Because I think, well, yes, one of my male colleagues said to me recently, what's really great is that you've proved that you can be a nice person, but you can still be tough and make difficult decisions. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's really good to hear. Mm-hmm. But I think when he says you're a nice person, and what he probably means is like, you've got the women's kind of soft skills. Like,
yeah.
And I'm really hot on trying to change the culture of the union itself and make sure that it's more inclusive, as well as definitely looking outward to the industry.
And that's important to have the change start at home first. And obviously your experiences feed into like how you want to change and what you want, you know, the union to change and the industry as well. And it's all adds up and comes together to make some nice positive change in the future, which is very, very exciting. And I think obviously, like you touched upon motherhood, and that's a whole other aspect of the music industry that we could talk about for hours, about how there needs to be more protection for like women in music as well. And obviously the fact that you said, like, kind of being unsure about taking maternity leave and still wanting to, well, not even still wanting to work, but feeling like you have to, like not having that option, is another industry issue that needs to change as well.
Well, and I'm having this problem at the moment because there's a lot of meetings that I go to, or like conferences and things that run over a few days.
Yeah.
It's such a childcare juggle. And the thing is that the expectation is it's always the general secretary. And one of the things that I'm going to have to put in place over time is that actually this needs to be a bit more shared out.
Yeah.
I'm lucky that my two assistant general secretaries are guys who have young children, and they're very good at saying, I can't do a meeting at that time because I've got the school run.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think again, the perception is that because they're men, if you hire them into a position, you don't even have to think about what their childcare duties are. But actually, I've got two guys who are very actively involved in their families' lives, as they should be, like equally parenting, and therefore it's okay for them to say that they have to do the school run too. So it's not just me having to say that.
And it must be a relief for you as well, because there's less pressure on you to be like, oh, I don't want to let someone down or whatever. That having those people that are exactly the same is just going to help settle you, because you're like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, and hopefully it also means that other people in the organisation can do likewise.
Yeah.
We've all got a bit better at it during the pandemic because working from home, you know, I did a radio interview the other day and at the end of the interview, my daughter burst into the room yelling, skip ads, mummy, because she was watching something on YouTube. And the interviewer said, anyway, we'll leave you to your domestic duties. And I thought, that's really unfortunate. But that's just what, you know, people have got a bit more used to it.
Yeah, especially from working from home from the pandemic. You know, you can't stop a dog barking. If your dog wants to bark, he's going to bark. And if your kids want something, they're going to do that, you know.
Yeah.
This is working with it, and that's it.
Yeah, and you can't, you know, I wasn't going to not go for this role because I've got young children.
Yeah.
And I hope that it makes me a better general secretary in some ways. Like, you know, musicians have these challenges.
Yeah.
So a lot of our members are struggling with trying to book childcare to work on the weekend. So, you know, I'm in the same boat and I think that's positive.
Yeah. And I think it's like, it is positive, and there is so much that can be changed for the better with that and supporting parents in music as well. How would you like to see things change with kind of parenting and the role of motherhood in music? How would you like there to be more support, I guess?
Well, we're supportive of Selfie Leave, which is the campaign to get self-employed kind of maternity leave or support. So it's those sorts of things. I think for freelancers, it's particularly tough because there isn't the support package in place. We're also drafting policies, like we've now got a breastfeeding policy for freelancers. So these, if we can put these things in place and they're just as standard, it stops an individual person having to go and try and negotiate when they need to stop a session to do the expressing of milk, or like having a place where there's a fridge in a workplace. So we're trying to put some of those things in as standard, so that it just makes it less difficult for the individual, I guess.
And it's less compromise as well. They can just do what they need to do and be who they need to be and not have to worry about like the connotations of that, or you know, how someone reacts to it. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah.
Really important.
I had a male colleague say that he took his kids in to work briefly the other day because it's August, and he was like, you know, they're on school holidays and they just came in to meet him for lunch. But he got a bit of a negative reaction from some colleagues. And I think, you know, we've got to just get to a point where we accept that people are individuals with lives.
Yeah.
And we're not just all about work. And sometimes the two things are going to slightly overlap.
Exactly. And I think it's treating people like they're humans, because we are.
Yeah.
You know, it's as simple as that, really. It really is. We have our next kind of question, I guess, is we go on to a fun round section.
Okay.
So this is one of my favourite parts. Me and Molly get very excited about this because, you know, some good stuff in here. So we'll go with the first one. What artists are you listening to at the moment?
At the moment, I'm listening to Self Esteem quite a lot because I saw her perform and she was just so brilliant. And so she's, very much stuck in my head at the moment.
Where did you see them perform?
So it was after the Ivors Awards this year. There was an event afterwards and she came and performed, and it was a really intimate setting and she was absolutely fantastic. So I've been addicted ever since.
Oh my God, I love that. That's amazing. There's nothing better than like finding an artist, hearing them live, and then just obsessively listening to them afterwards. I think getting the two sides is very nice.
Yeah.
What's your favourite gig you've ever been to?
Well, my favourite festival is End of the Road Festival, which I'm going to. It's always like the first weekend of September.
Nice.
So it's like end of summer, and it's always a lovely, lovely festival. And one of the best performances I saw there was John Grant.
Ooh.
And he was his music very emotional. It was just absolutely gorgeous. But I also saw Arlo Parks there.
Oh,
and that's
amazing.
How I discovered Arlo Parks as well. And then I obsessively listened to her. So it's kind of, seeing the live experience first and then getting into the music afterwards. And it kind of just brings it to life in a different way.
I think that's my favourite way to discover artists is live, then listen to them. Because I think the other way around, you don't know what to expect and you can be a bit like, oh, what's going to happen? But seeing them live, I get hooked on bands that maybe I wouldn't normally listen to because I love their performance. So that's amazing that you discovered, especially Arlo Parks, who is a legend. So I love that for you. It's good.
Thanks.
What was the first album you ever bought?
Well, I think that it shows my age, but I think I probably bought Kylie Minogue on cassette tape.
Love that.
But I think when I was kind of, if I can go to when I was 18 and I was actually starting to go and see bands, it was Ben Folds Five, who were my favourite band for ages, and I followed them around a lot. It's called Whatever and Ever Amen, and it was like, it's quite upbeat, and it's a bit like, it just had a bit of a teenage vibe to it, which was really great at the time.
So. Amazing. I love that for you. Some nice variety in there. So for our final section, this is my absolute favourite section, where we talk about kind of like your best qualities, why you think you are the best at your job, why you deserve to be here, basically.
Oh,
it's a chance to just go wild.
All right, okay. So I've talked about as being very ambitious because I suppose I'm young-ish for a trade union general secretary, and obviously being the first woman. But it was, you know, you can either see that as a positive or some people see it as a negative. But, you know, hey, I think it's a positive. It's driven me through my career, and it's, you know, you have to be pretty ambitious to go for general secretary, because the campaigning process and the election process is very difficult, and you're going to be criticised, and it's incredibly personal.
So
to a certain extent, I probably have developed a thick skin. However, I do think the softer side is probably a positive as well.
People
want to see, like you say, that you're a real person and that there's a vulnerability there. So I was asked at this trade union event with the, you know, I said there was a panel of women general secretaries, and we were asked, how did we all get through the campaigning and the election process? And I said, well, I've really got into some great self-help podcasts, which are like women talking about, you know, challenges that we have, essentially. And Glennon Doyle is somebody that I totally recommend. I just absolutely love her. But I also said I was having weekly therapy sessions, and I saw a guy in the audience like completely horrified. But all the other general secretaries are like, yep, you know, hey, if you're doing a difficult job, you need to have an outlet for that and not just talking to family and friends about it. And so, you know, hopefully being unashamed to talk about that in an industry, by the way, that does, you know, where well-being and mental health has been neglected for a long time. And we want to bring it up the agenda. You've got to talk about your own personal experiences, I think. So hopefully that's a positive.
Oh, yeah, definitely a positive. And I think, like you said, talking about your experiences and also normalizing that, like, therapy is a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a real good thing.
Everyone could benefit from it.
Yeah. I love having therapy. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, I'm lucky I could afford to do it.
Yeah.
But it was essential. So it wasn't a case of... you know, do I do it or not? It was like, how am I going to survive this period of my life?
Exactly. And obviously, like, as you know, women come under a lot more scrutiny in the public eye. And that's a lot of, like, emotion to go through, especially when you've got a family and this is so important to you. You've got to, like, you know, balance many plates at the same time. It's essential. It's not a luxury to have it. It's essential. But I love that. Like, what a lovely... I love that those traits for you, being ambitious, and you're very lovely. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank
you so much for coming on Not a Groupie. I have loved it.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. You love it? I told you you'd love her. Here at Cactus City and Not a Groupie, we have a lot of thank yous to do for the end of the first season of Not a Groupie. We want to start off with a big thank you to the MU for letting us in your space and speaking to Naomi. It was absolutely amazing and we loved it. Another huge thank you to every single guest that we've had on this series. You all took a massive chance by speaking to us. Thank you to Focusrite for sponsoring our producer episodes too. It's so amazing seeing organisations like you backing women in music. Thank you to every single listener who raved about us online, shared with us your stories, and shared us with your friends. I really hope that you enjoyed getting nerdy about women in music with me. If you still want your Not a Groupie fix, you can listen to us on your favourite podcast streaming platform, and you can check out our socials on Twitter and Instagram at Not a Groupie Pod. This season was brought to you by Cactus City Studio, so make sure you check out every single one of our socials. We have TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter at Cactus City UK. Love you.